It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio. I'm David Leventhal. Thanks for joining us on today's show on Democratic Debate version 4.12. In order to fully cover the debate, I'd like to start out by talking about what will not be on today's show. Not on today's show will be Donald Trump meeting with congressional leaders, at which he called Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi apparently a third-grade politician. I'm sure he did it with all due respect, making her more mature than him. We will not be talking about the leader of the free world's letter to the president of Turkey, occasioned by his impetuous phone conversation wherein he gave him the green light to invade Kurds in northern Syria. A letter that I would be pretty embarrassed if my actual third grader had written. A letter replete with exclamation points and including the famous language that history will look upon you forever as the devil if good things don't happen. Don't be a tough guy. Don't be a fool. Harsh words from the President of the United States. I will not be talking about how the President of the United States has invited the world leaders for the next G7, yes, at his golf resort, so he could make a lot of money. We will not be talking about the frog march to prison that pretty much the entire world is hoping for at this point among Trump henchmen, and we will not be opining on who's likely to room with whom, as we all just root for Rudy to lead the parade to long indictments. We will not be talking much about impeachment, although I will spend a couple minutes on impeachment now before we get into the debate. Just a couple of things that have come up as highlights, because it's really hard to have a show and leave these things out. Like the video showing at a Trump rally, a Trump event, depicting him brutalizing and killing journalists and political opponents. Those kidders. Having this video out, of course, to some of the craziest and stupidest people on the planet who have a history of actually committing or trying to commit such crime. Well, after the news of the video surfaced, the President of the United States neglected to criticize it. He was busy, of course. He was too busy with, among other things, wishing his former liar-in-chief, Sean Spicer, good luck on Dancing with the Stars. Way more important, obviously. We have a little more insight into how the Trump administration is going to be continuing to battle the impeachment and the obvious crimes that the President of the United States has committed. They're going to rely on the old Republican standby, religious wars. Yes, Attorney General William Barr was at Notre Dame this week, basically starting the religious wars and talking about how God disfavors Democrats and favors Republicans. Then, of course, we've got Mick Mulvaney, the, in some respects, the new Michael Cohen for Donald Trump, the chief of staff and head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and man for whom there just basically isn't any job that should be out of his reach since he is an absolute incompetent lackey. Well, Mick Mulvaney actually copped to a crime on behalf of Donald Trump this week. He did it on videotape. He did it in front of a lot of witnesses. Doesn't matter. A few hours later, that didn't stop him from trying to take it back by, among other things, blaming the media and criticizing the media for, I guess, reporting on his words, reality being a problem for this administration. A reminder with Mick Mulvaney coming out when the video's out there and just flat out denying that he said it and blaming on the media. How invigorating it must be to have the great luxury of having supporters who are just brain dead fucking morons. And it's coming out this week as the hearings so far are being held in private. So maybe they could prevent some kind of collusion when it comes to testimony, when it make it more difficult for Republicans to get their story straight. the Democrats have reminded us that they will take the hearings public as soon as they have the evidence that they need and as soon as they have people on record already saying. So they've nailed down their testimony, I guess this being different than the court of public opinion. And we keep being reminded that as the hearings are going to go public, what this country needs and what this impeachment needs is a John Dean in the White House. John Dean, some of my older listeners might recall, was Nixon's chief White House lawyer, whose testimony ultimately against Richard Nixon is coming out against the administration is what sealed Richard Nixon's doom. Well, here's the thing with the John Dean moment. First of all, it's already apparent that there are a lot of so-called John Deans out there. There are a lot of people in the administration already trying to save their skin, and these public hearings are going to be a lot of fun. But there will be no John Dean out there, because John Dean, for whatever his demerits working for Richard Nixon, is a serious human being, and was at the time. There's nobody serious in the White House. There's nobody of John Dean's stature. There's nobody of his reputation, or at least seemingly his integrity. So there's nobody who is turning on the White House. Can't just be dismissed on Fox News as, you know, a bunch of liberal whistleblowers. More on impeachment in future shows, but I want to get to the Democratic debate, which I'm calling 4.12, 4 being, I guess, the round of debates, and 12 being the number of people on a very crowded stage. So debate 4.12, deja vu all over again, especially in several respects, the answers often being better than the questions. The questioning got off to, I guess, a reasonable start, this being in the midst of impeachment, and impeachment being so traumatic for this country, such a big deal, it was natural that they would start off by asking about impeachment. Some of the questions, I guess, designed, why would you support impeachment at this point? Shouldn't the answer be at the ballot box? Things like that. Here's basically a summary of all 12 responses to the impeachment question? Well, Anderson, because the Constitution still matters and the law still matters to one of the two political parties in this country, that's why I support impeachment. I support impeachment because this is going to be kind of a long debate, and during the 3 hours of this debate, the President of the United States, the so-called leader of the free world, will probably commit several impeachable offenses. And we need to tell the country that the rule of law actually matters. But then, after that, we went to the usual pop-up question, first question among the debates, and we have Mark Lacy, the national editor of the New York Times, and one of the three questioners to thank for this one. Great job, Mark Lacy, asking Elizabeth Warren about whether taxes are going to go up with her health care plan. Oh my God, what an interesting question. Who could have seen that one coming? You know, my 8-year-old and my 6-year-old sons have a thing now that they've come home from school with. They'll say, "Hey, Daddy," and when you turn and say, "What?" they respond by saying, "5 to get rid of it." The idea being that they are trying to get you to say the word "what." That's the game. Once you say the word "what," I'm not even sure what the hell you're supposed to do within the 5 minutes, but it's bad. The idea is you're not supposed to say what. Well, we continue to have the adult version of that, where Mark Lacy of the New York Times, ultimately joined by others, are trying to get Elizabeth Warren to say the word taxes. Taxes. Actually asking about the specifics of the differences of the proposed health care plans from the different people on stage, that, I guess, is too complicated. That, I guess, is too much. That doesn't get your Pulitzer-winning moment, I suppose, as it would if you got Elizabeth Warren to say the word taxes so that Fox News will get their video clip and they won't even have to make it up to run it all over Fox News on Facebook and everywhere else they're going to be running fake ads. As embarrassing as it was that the national editor of the New York Times starts with this childish question, trying to get Elizabeth Warren to say the word tax, Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, subsequently joined in, not having to wait long for his moment to pounce. And when I say Mayor Pete, of course, I'm referring to Mayor Pete 2.0. Because this Mayor Pete having now obviously seen a new path to the presidential nomination, is very different from the old Pete. The guy who kind of believed in big ideas and liberalism and spent most of this debate deriding big ideas and trying to get Elizabeth Warren to say the T word. And yet, he gets to use that the line that I've said many times on this show is the dead ringer, the dead giveaway, rather, that a politician is full of shit. When he said, the American people are smart. Yes, he was the first to do that. You know he's full of shit when he says that. This is a man who leveled with the country about his sexual orientation when he was, what, in his late 20s or something? Yeah, the American public is real smart. Mayor Pete, the American public is so smart. Have you noticed who the president is? Yes, the guy writing third grade letters. That's how smart the American public is. That's the guy you're trying to unseat. But you know how dumb the American public is? They're so dumb that they love politicians who tell them how smart they are. Again, with healthcare, everybody knows that Elizabeth Warren's plan is going to shift expenses from the private sector that people pay at work and shift it instead to government and where people will pay for it in their taxes. Yes, taxes will go up. As I've noted many times, people will have $2 pulled from their right pocket at the same time they have $3 being put in. But with the smart American public, our history has been that you can't use the word taxes. You want to talk about treating the American public as smart? There was only one person on that stage willing to treat the American public as smart, hoping that 51 or 52 or the 55% he probably would need to be elected president would actually act like adults. And that was Bernie Sanders, who has come out and said, yes, taxes will go up under my plan, but wait, don't turn the dial. Let me explain to you why that will benefit you. I'm glad, of course, that we had time for this usual bullshit in the debate. It's just a damn shame we didn't have enough time to talk about climate change again. Among other questions that I really thought worthy of discussing the discussion itself on the wealth tax. I got to bring this one into class. I was asked about this. Wealth tax. Should people who have more money than God be expected to pay a little bit more into a country that is unable to invest in its future? This is a real duh. The only question to ask is, why the hell is anybody on this stage or anywhere in this country not supporting dramatically higher taxes on the fabulously wealthy, on the super rich, on the ultra billionaires? As I've mentioned before, they keep selling us this pipe dream about how smart they are and how great they are and how much better they are than us and how special they are. When they're not, they just have way too much money, which prevent the rest of us from spending money on the things that we need to run a country. She was asked the offensive question, is she saying no billionaires? As our regular listeners will know, I've said on this show a lot, yes, no billionaires. Are you kidding me? What kind of a civilized world should have billionaires in it? People who are powerful because of how much money they've managed to probably steal, rather than because anybody actually cares about what they think? Of course there should be no billionaires. But of course nobody on stage is going to say that. And the offensiveness of the question was her wealth tax is what? A high of 2%? 2%? Starting at $50 million? Yeah. I guess that means no billionaires. Because if Jeff Bezos never earns another penny and spends like $1 million a day, in like a million years, he won't be a billionaire anymore. Wow. Kel horror that she might actually talk about taking some money who are taking everything out of this country. We will continue to cover this in future episodes of the show. Then we have Mayor Pete coming out talking about pitting people against each other. Beto even joined this one. pitting people against each other. Right. Pitting people against each other. Oh, those poor billionaires. Who, by the way, have been pitting themselves against the rest of us by not paying taxes for a really long time. No, Elizabeth Warren actually had a great answer for this, and it shouldn't be lost in the shuffle. I'm not pitting people against people. It's worthy of noting what I am doing that offends you, Pete, Beto, and the rest, is I am pitting people against donors. And that's where your problem really is. Anyway, it would be nice to see Democrats on stage stop echoing GOP talking points. It is not Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders who are the divisive ones. They are the ones fighting for a civilized society. They are the ones fighting for everybody in this country to have a chance to get ahead, for everybody's children to have a chance to succeed. They are the ones fighting for investment in the future of this country rather than allowing the ultra super rich to destroy the future of this country to put a little bit more into their pockets today. It's not about money, certainly not for the Republican Party, and apparently not for some of the people on this stage, even more certainly not for the super wealthy. It's not even about having more money for them. All of them would survive just nicely on $1 billion, and in many respects, they'd be happier, because if they were limited to $1 billion, so would all of their friends who have more than them and are currently making them miserable with envy right now. It's not about that. It's about homage. It's about telling the super rich how much we love them and how great they are. Anyway, we're also hearing the Democrats throw out the idea that it will be hard to get people to join in, to join Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders when she's taking on regular Republican donors and Republican rich people. And as came up several times during the debate, it's worth asking ourselves, is it really Republican voters who should be determining this Democratic nomination? David Brooks had another one of his op-eds in the New York Times this week. And to be fair, he said if it's between Elizabeth Warren and Trump, those of us who are never Trumpers are going to need to bite the bullet and vote for Elizabeth Warren. Good for you, David Brooks. But the whole article was about how upset he is that the Democratic Party is not reaching out to Republicans like him and William Kristol and all the other dyed-in-the-wool Republicans, rock-red Republicans. And the Democratic Party is not becoming the non-crazy Republican Party. What a shame that Republicans find the actual Democratic wing of the Democratic Party a problem for them. But it shouldn't be news. The one thing that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren really stand out about is that they are actual Democrats, historic Democrats, people who believe in traditional Democratic values. So yes, as several people on the stage thought and the super rich think, and certainly all the Republican supporters think, gosh, if only Democrats would nominate a Republican, how great would that be? At least there was one good moment, by the way, that should be passed up, and this moment belonged to former Vice President Joe Biden, when he at least brought it into the real world and started mentioning how the wealthy aren't paying their share of taxes, and brought up the discrepancy between income taxes and capital gains taxes, and how people who make their money through work are paying so much more than people who earn their money through investments. There was a moment that we, I think, should be talking about post-debate, and that should matter. We probably won't, of course, because most of the donors really aren't on board for that one. But while the media is asking all these gotcha questions to try to make the Democrats come out against their donors and against the support of people who will turn off the TV in 15 seconds, maybe the media should start asking some other questions about money and what we can afford. Maybe they should start asking how much inaction will cost regarding health care. Instead of asking Elizabeth Warren how much her health care plan will cost and how she's willing to pay for it, why don't they ask everybody else on the stage how much inaction on health care will cost? How much a failure to take out insurance company and ultra-rich people's profits, profit-taking from our healthcare industry, how we will be able to afford that. Why don't we ask how we will be able to afford inaction on climate, how we will be able to afford inaction on education, how we will be able to afford inaction on infrastructure. In that vein, maybe my favorite question of the whole debate, at least as far as discussion purposes, was the question citing Mark Zuckerberg regarding breaking up big tech companies. Mark Zuckerberg says that breaking up big tech companies wouldn't be a good idea. Wow. I wish that the response to that question had been, oh my God, really? Mark Zuckerberg doesn't think that breaking up his company would be a good idea? That's a worthy question of asking a debate. Oh, by the way, I have a question for you. Who the fuck gives a shit what Mark Zuckerberg thinks? That should be the question asked of every candidate. You, in a recent speech, mentioned the name Mark Zuckerberg. Here's my question to you. Why the fuck should anybody care about Mark Zuckerberg? He's a rich little dipshit who made a ridiculous amount of money by probably stealing a website that was designed to allow Harvard boys to hit on Harvard girls. Wow, that guy should be running this country, shouldn't he? What a metaphor for what is wrong with this country. And keep mentioning donors, Elizabeth Warren. Now we've got the Supreme Court question, of course. I like that one. And I've spoken at length on this show about how something needs to be done about the fact that the Supreme Court is solidly in Republican hands, as is most of our federal judiciary, despite the fact that Republicans have lost 6 out of the last 7 presidential elections. The question really, of course, should be, if you become the president, that will mean the Democrats have won 7 out of the last 8 popular votes, Democratic elections for president of the United States. What are you going to do to try to make our court system better reflect the voters of this country? To be fair on this one, everybody who answered gave some reasonable, good, and thoughtful answer. And there's a reasonable dispute here between people who believe we should just pack the court and add numbers and people who believe that we should impose some kind of term limits on Supreme Court justices and presumably federal judges to allow more turnover and more presidential appointments. To thoughtful answers about how judges and justices would take the court, requiring more support for nominees, bipartisan support, which would promote more moderate appointments. All of these things reflect honest disagreements, policy disagreements within the Democratic Party. All that is, of course, except for former Vice President Joe Biden, who got rolled over on this one and reminded us what his true weakness, I believe, really is. What he chooses to present as a strength, understandably, is really his weakness. And that is that Joe Biden talked about preserving the integrity of the United States Supreme Court. Newsflash, Mr. Biden, the Supreme Court has no integrity. That's long gone. And the idea that he's getting rolled, and once again, Republicans could steal Supreme Court seats and federal court seats, but Democrats will play nice if they ever get elected. So I want to go into how everybody, I think, did on the debate very quickly. But before we get to that, I'd like to just state my opinion on who won the debate. And the winner of the debate, obviously, was John McCain. Yeah, John McCain, who seemed to be the best answer to imagine who would surprise everybody that you have would call a friend or that you've called a friend. What a great question. And that was sarcasm, in case you missed that. But as they're all struggling to figure out how to answer a stupid question of who would it surprise us to know that you're friends with, I was just imagining for a minute that they did this at the Republican debate. Anybody want to guess what the top answer would be? Who would it surprise the viewers and everybody else on stage that you have a friendship with? Ding, ding, ding. Winning answer. It's a tie between Jesus and the ghost of Ronald Reagan. But anyway, John McCain was the easy answer for Democrats because, unlike Republicans, Democrats like to show how nicely they play with the other side. And that was where 10 of them were on the stage yesterday. A reminder just for a few moments of how John McCain is the quintessential Republican that had some integrity, perhaps, when he passed away. And how quickly we forget that John McCain was the man who brought us Sarah Palin. John McCain was the man who became the bitch of the Republican Party, who opposed his own long-fought-for campaign finance reform bill because he really, really, really needed to sell out to get the Republican nomination. The man who was completely demavericked and became the bitch of the Republican Party in 2008 because he really, really, really wanted to be president. Or maybe, I think, the winner of the debate may have been Ron Reagan. No, not that Ronald Reagan. Ron Reagan Jr., who may have won the debate by TV commercials. In case you didn't fast forward over the TV commercials, Ron Reagan Jr. had several commercials during the debate that I had noticed for his Freedom From Religion Foundation, trying to undo some of what his dad helped rot in America, trying to undo what the Republicans in this country are trying to ratchet up. This country's turn to religion in our politics. Anyway, real quickly, in a few minutes, how did they do? Elizabeth Warren, of course, was everybody's punching bag, being among the leaders now, and pretty much everybody else seeing that their only path to the presidency is to take the moderate path. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are left alone among the real progressives in the Democratic Party and on that stage. I thought she defended herself remarkably well. I thought in most exchanges she looked like the more intelligent and the more thoughtful person in the exchange, especially with one exchange with Biden, an exchange with Kamala at some point. But they really were throwing everything at her to try to stop the progressive train. She clearly demonstrated that she knew her stuff. She clearly demonstrated that she was her own person. Yes, the problem with the fact that she cannot say the word taxes and she cannot say what's going on with her health care plan, that does figure to be a problem down the line. But a reminder that she basically has the right stuff. And her corruption theme, her anti-corruption theme, should be the story of the election. And it's hers and Bernie's. She did not, unlike in the last debate, she did not have a chance to talk about her great life story, which I think was shown in the last debate to be a real debate winner, a political winner. But I actually felt that despite the fact that she was the target for everybody, she had a good night. I thought Bernie, once again, had a great night. He was solid, a better performance than the last time, where he obviously looked a little under the weather, so to speak. Coming back after his heart attack, it was important for Bernie to have a solid and strong showing, and I think he did. Reminder that he is the only one up there respecting the American public and telling it like it is. The only one up there, as honest as I think they basically all are, and as good as I think they basically all are, Bernie Sanders is the only one up there standing on the stage, basically just totally leveling with the American people. Part of the reason that most of us think he really doesn't have a chance to win. On stage, he's willing to say taxes. He's willing to say socialism. In the prior debate, he did a wonderful job of explaining what his socialism actually meant and making it accessible to anybody who might actually want to listen. He once again got to do his line about revolution, but it was once again clear throughout the debate that revolution is, in fact, what this country needs. He had great responses in both debates to the question about the cost of health care, pointing out, especially in the prior debate, that not doing anything would actually cost a whole bunch of trillions of dollars more. Not that that changed the questions in the next debate, in the most recent debate. He was consistent in his call for public investment and jobs, which is what this country needs. Whether everybody in this country can actually have a job, whether his jobs guarantee is workable, the point is still a good one. The ideal is still what the Democrats should be fighting for. One thing with Bernie, if he wins, it will be on his terms. Bernie Sanders reminds us that this is supposedly what Republican voters have been asking for a long time, an honest politician. Joe Biden continues to look like a decent man, but as far as I'm concerned, more and more looking like a man who's missed his time. He's sort of having trouble figuring out when he needs to muster the anger and when it's kind of inappropriate to muster the anger. His mustering the anger at Elizabeth Warren regarding the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau seemed kind of misplaced to me. And yet his not being able to muster enough anger at Donald Trump and Republicans for attacking him and his son on bullshit on the Ukraine scandal still seemed to me kind of problematic. He gave the wrong answer on court and still believing that the Republicans have integrity and members of the Supreme Court had integrity. And maybe there he missed his time as well. He's a reminder, I guess, to better days where maybe we had two functioning political parties in this country. He talked about his big line, how you have to level with people. And the problem with when he talks about leveling with the people is it's hard not to think that those are the two people standing on either side of you, basically, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. One moment that I did not think was a good moment for him, especially in the context of leveling with people, was the idea that his line, and I quote, insurance companies were strongly against Obamacare, to talk about how he fights against donors, he fights against the big money to win. Well, here's the thing, though. Insurance companies were not strongly against Obamacare. Obamacare was made with the input of insurance companies because Obama and Biden and everybody else knew that you don't get things passed in America without rich companies being on board. At least, not until now. So this idea that we got this against insurance companies was kind of problematic to me. You got this through because you didn't offend the insurance companies, because you gave them millions more customers without doing the kind of things, in some respects, that needed to be done to keep costs down, like the public option, which isn't there to a large extent, because that would have pissed off insurance companies. His summation was inspiring, and his lane about American possibilities, again, is wonderful, sounds nice, great tagline. But once again, just reminds us that if you're really looking for American possibilities, it's really not the guy who's going to work with Republicans. It's Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Cory Booker, I thought, had two good debates. And every time I see him in debates, I think, this guy deserves better than that. I didn't think he was quite as strong in the last debate as he was beforehand, where he scored big regarding farmers, speaking up for farmers against factory farms. Education, speaking up for the common man. I thought he was more progressive in the last debate. Maybe he, too, has kind of seen where his future path to the nomination could possibly lie. Great life story with Cory Booker as well, but as I look at Cory Booker in the debate, it's hard to think, wow, he would be a great running mate for Elizabeth Warren. What a great ticket, Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker. And then we've got Mayor Pete, who once again shows us that he has a remarkably impressive life story. He is a very impressive speaker. He is a very intelligent man. He is thoughtful. And yet he is Pete 2.0. For all his talk about leveling and honesty and whatever else, he has thrown Pete 1.0 under the bus. The aggressive progressive that he was earlier in the campaign is a thing of the past, replaced by the aggressive moderate. The man who also, as far as I'm concerned in the last debate, came on way too strong, and with his attack right off the bat that was prepackaged and planned and a way to make a point, with Elizabeth Warren not answering a yes-no question on taxes, as much as I respect and like Pete Buttigieg, I jumped up out of my chair and said, fuck you, enough of that with the bullshit with the answering a yes-no question on taxes. Okay, Mayor Pete has decided where his lane is. He is still an impressive individual, and I will be happy to support him if he is the nominee. But boy, in my eyes, did he just drop dramatically as far as my likelihood of supporting him as the nominee. He talked about how the Midwest distrusts politicians who have great ideas, but yet nothing ever changes. Well, maybe nothing ever changes because people like you decide that their path to the presidency is to stop fighting and to start accepting moderation and working with Republicans. Once again, if people in the Midwest are upset because nothing ever changes, Take a look at the people standing around you, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, because they're the change agents at this debate. His fight with Beto, frankly, I thought was his low moment of the entire primary season. Once again, a faux prepared fight with Beto that he was all ready for on guns, and he was going to, I guess, implicitly bring up his military record by talking about, don't question my bravery, my courage. And once again, talking about trusting the American people. Give me a break. This isn't about trusting the American people. This is about taglines, and this is kind of about bullshit. And you know what? The biggest joke here, kind of like Julian and his bad moment in the last debate with Biden. The sad part is you're even wrong. He's right. It may be that you're not going to get every assault weapon off the streets with the buyback, but you're going to get a lot of them off the streets. And you may not get them out of people's homes. And yes, we're not going to go to people's homes and take them away, but maybe we're going to keep them in people's homes so they don't take them out. That's good enough. It was hard to just think that whole fight about guns was just a ridiculous fight about absolutely nothing, just so people can score cheap political points. His best moment was on the courts, where it's been all along. He hasn't changed that he indicates that he will lean towards packing the courts, but then he managed to soften that and argue against that, talk about leveling with the American people, at the same time by indicating that he will work with the GOP. Because here's the thing, Mayor Pete, the GOP will not work with you at all, and it sure as hell will not work with you when it comes to making the courts more accurately reflect the American voter. Amy Klobuchar, in two debates, again, positioning herself as the moderate alternative. At least she has done that from the very beginning. Positioning herself as the moderate alternative to Elizabeth and Bernie. You know, watching the debate, did you know that Amy Klobuchar is from the Midwest? Yeah, I'm kind of getting sick of this Midwest bullshit. Who gives a shit where you're from? The fact that, once again, you can appeal to a bunch of, in many cases, racist Republican voters or quasi-Republican voters isn't a reason we should make you the Democratic candidate. Again, my belief is, let's try in 2020 to actually get a Democratic candidate. She had a moment that I just want to call out a little bit, just a correction, no big deal. She was in her responses about impeachment. She talked about how the president of the United States was trying to dig up dirt or get Ukraine to dig up dirt on his political opponent. I want to just again make it clear that that is not what the president of the United States has been trying to do. He is not trying to dig up dirt. He is trying to make up dirt or get Ukraine to make up dirt. And that's actually a lot worse. And by the way, when you become president, have fun working with those people. Her low moment was impugning Elizabeth Warren's honesty in a moment that didn't come across very well for her. And my feeling with Klobuchar is continue to run for Senate, but frankly, being palatable to Republicans is just not good enough for a Democratic candidate at this point. Kamala reminds us that she is bright and competent, that she would make an excellent president, undoubtedly. She would make a great candidate. But the last two debates, she struck me as being sort of remarkably flat, seeming to me that she's kind of missed her moment. Maybe it'll come back. Maybe she'll get a surge, a second wind, so to speak. But my feeling with Kamala, the two debates, was that she basically left no mark. One point in the most recent debate, she went toe-to-toe with Elizabeth Warren, who... This is the Twitter thing. Again, a fight about basically nothing, about whether you should ask the head of Twitter. And again, here's a real problem that we're asking billionaires to save the country for us. But asking the head of Twitter to disable Donald Trump's account, that's really not a big moment. It's really not a big policy idea. And I know you want to go after Elizabeth Warren, but one, she was ready for it. She got the better of you on this riposte, and you're left watching the whole thing going, why are they bothering here? Tulsi Gabbard was not at the prior debate, just the most recent one. Her moment to me, well, she doesn't have any moment. Obviously, she's not getting the nomination. She's not going anywhere. I mean, she seems like a wonderful congresswoman and all that. She's got a lot going for her. The only thing notable, I think, for the most part about what she had said was pointing out that Donald Trump won in 2016. And again, the important part of that is to remind us all how deep the problem is in this country, that we just accept the fact that the man who lost the election by 3 million votes won the election. And a reminder of why we need to fight in this election and why we need a real progressive. Because a lot needs to be changed in this country, including the way we elect presidents, i.e. the Electoral College. The fact that we just take as accepted that Donald Trump won in 2016, and therefore how much must change. She obviously also did not have a good moment where her lunch was handed to her on the Syria debate by Pete Buttigieg, who sounded stronger, sounded more confident, and did have the luxury of actually probably being right and having the better policy proposal. Andrew Yang finally had his moment again. Andrew Yang seems like a very competent guy, decent enough guy, at least for a really, really wealthy person. He reminds us that Democrats probably shouldn't be nominating a really, really rich person to be their standard bearer. To be fair to Andrew Yang, he's fighting the good fight, and he finally got his moment on his one issue, universal basic income, which actually got a lot of discussion in the last debate. My understanding is that Elizabeth Warren actually contacted Andrew Yang after the debate and said, could you please send me some more information about UBI? So he may get his moment, at least with his signature policy. It's hard to imagine that he's going to get anything else other than that. He had a really bad moment covering sort of the last two debates, not in the past debate, but the one before it, where he started out in his introduction with basically an anti-government diatribe, which, as far as I'm concerned, should disqualify him from the Democratic nomination. You're running for the Democratic nomination. One thing we should all agree on is you believe in the importance and the power of the United States government. Rich people telling us that we could solve our own problems better than a politician, that's really fine until we start thinking about climate change and the air that we breathe and the water that we drink. That's a wonderful tagline, but too often it's just absolutely bullshit, because problems don't get solved by individuals in this country. They get solved by a functioning government. It's hard to imagine that Andrew Yang has enough money to buy enough voters to keep his presidential candidacy actually alive. Julian Castro, I like him very much. I don't think his presidential candidacy is really alive at this point. He didn't get a chance to speak so much in our last debate. He had toned it down from the one before. I like what he has to say. I thought, talk about bravery. I've been talking about Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders in particular. Julian Castro showed some bravery, maybe the bravery that comes from knowing that you're not going to win, when he did the unthinkable, taking on the police in this country. Sacrosanct police that nobody can actually take on, which leads to a whole lot of problems. I love the fact that he's doing that. I hope there's a role for government for him in our next government, and I hope that role has to do with taking on the police nationwide. Beto O'Rourke has looked fine in the last two debates. He needs some dramatic fire to burn or something to happen to get him back into the top tier of candidates he kind of is the other Pete Buttigieg, and it looks like Pete Buttigieg has probably gotten the edge on Beto for that niche, I suppose, in the running. Beto reminds us what a tremendously great Senate and gubernatorial candidate he would make. And is it too late to convince him to run for John Cornyn's seat in Texas? His moment of getting Elizabeth Warren, of attacking Elizabeth Warren by noting that she was pitting people against each other with the fact that she wanted a small tax on billionaires, was really a low point, I think, maybe his lowest point in his campaign. Speaking of billionaires, we got Tom Steyer up there on the stage. Let's not forget that. Tom Steyer, you got to love the fact that there's a billionaire on the stage joining the progressives. You got to love the cover that he gave for Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders when it came to things like money, the wealth tax, corporate corruption. Way to go, Tom Steyer. I'm liking you more and more and more. But we're reminded again that being rich is not a strong enough, is not strong enough for a resume in the Democratic primary. Tom Steyer has demonstrated that he is bright, he is decent. He apparently, unlike our current president, has done something to actually earn his money, but not enough of a change from where we are currently. And the battle is basically against really, really, really rich people. He did have the best line of the night, which is that everyone on that stage would be a better president than the one we've got now. A reminder for all of us. Anyway, those are my thoughts on the debate and the candidates. That's the show this week. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.